Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Also, check out our growing YouTube archive at youtube.greatdetectives.net. As you make your travel plans, remember JohnnyDollarAir.com. JohnnyDollarAir.com is a Priceline affiliate, so you get all the benefits of going through Priceline.com, but part of the purchase price goes to support the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio at no additional cost to you. So remember, when you're making your travel plans, check JohnnyDollarAir.com first. Now it's time for today's episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. The original air date, October the 9th, 1960. And this one is The Recompense Matter.
Johnny Dollar.
Johnny, this is Don Boomhauer down here in Sarasota, Florida.
Don, how are you?
Oh, great, great.
Yeah? Now, what's the matter?
Well, the last time I called you, I mentioned that pal of yours, Earl Portman.
Yeah?
Told you he was out in California and that he'd left me holding down the local office of Tri-State Life and Casualty for him.
Oh, yeah, I
know. So what's he gone and done? Moved on out there to sunny, smoggy Southern California, bag and back.
Yeah, I heard from him a few
of them. I'm still running the Tri-State office here in Sarasota.
That's bad?
Be fine if it didn't take so much of my time away from my real estate business. But what I called you about, Johnny...
Yeah, trouble, Don?
Yes. Well, no, not exactly.
Well, which is it?
I mean, not exactly the kind you might expect. Looks like one of our clients, an old man by the name of William Trasker, is dying.
Old Bill Trasker, the fishing guy?
That's the one.
Yeah. Earl and I went fishing with him several times out in the Gulf.
Oh, so that's how he knows about you.
Well, what's he dying of, Don? I can't imagine anybody having it in for old Bill and trying to knock him off.
No, it's some rare type of kidney ailment, the doctor says. Nothing suspicious about it, nothing whatsoever.
Oh, well, then
and the amount of insurance he carries is so small as to be almost negligible.
How much, then?
$2,500.
Huh?
I know, Johnny. It would hardly seem to justify the cost of your coming down.
And if there's nothing suspicious about the circumstances...
Nothing at all. Be death from natural cause.
Well, Don, I'm afraid I don't see
but
any reason.
During his periods of consciousness, he's in a coma most of the time. He keeps asking for you.
Oh? Why?
Well, I don't know. Not for sure, that is. But what he keeps saying, or trying to say, and it's hard to understand him, well, Johnny, it sounds like he's trying to give us the clue to a murder.
Murder?
That's right.
Don, I'm on my way. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Tri-State Life and Casualty Insurance Company office in Sarasota, Florida. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the recompense matter. Expense account item 17970, taxi and a plane from Hartford to New York, then another one to Florida. At the International Airport in Tampa, Don Boomhauer was waiting for me. We piled into his air-conditioned car and headed south on the Tamiami Trail down towards Sarasota.
That's right, Johnny. Old Bill Trasker.
Dying of some kidney disease. Huh?
And according to Dr. Crutcher, nothing short of a miracle would save him.
Yes, too bad. He seemed like a mighty nice old man, a real gentleman. Well-educated, well-spoken. Hey, you'd expect to find him running a big business instead of a broken-down outboard rig to take out fishing parties.
So I understand. But frankly, Johnny, I'd never even seen old Bill until the doctor called me. Said he was dying and that he wanted to see you. Then I looked up his policy.
Yeah, $2,500, you said.
Yes, to be spent in giving him a modest but decent burial. And to pay any bills he might leave outstanding.
Uh-huh. Apparently, then, Bill won't be leaving much of an estate.
And you'll understand why when you see the little kind of shack he lives in.
But now, over the phone, you said something about a murder.
Well, Johnny, it was so difficult trying to understand what he was trying to say. Even when he seemed completely conscious, he was very vague. Except perhaps when he was asking for you. when he told us he had to see you before he goes.
Well, now, Don, why...
He never said the actual word murder, Johnny, but he, well, listen, there was a name he kept trying to tell us. It sounded like Jerry or Gerald something. Last name we couldn't get at all.
Well, have you checked over his relatives?
When we asked him about relatives, he just turned his face away and shook his head.
But now, if he was talking about a murder...
Johnny, it's just that... Well, Doc and I agreed that from what he said and, well, his knowing you and your work and wanting to see you and, well, you know how deathbed confessions
are. You're not making much sense.
Look, Doc will be waiting for us, and if Bill is conscious enough to make sense when he talks to you, well, let's just wait and see what you can get out of him.
Whatever you say, Doc. Home was a shack, all right, on a small, scrubby piece of land near the end of one of the bayous leading out from Sarasota Bay. As we stopped in front of the walk, I mean the long path through the palmettos that led up to it, Doc Crutcher came out to meet us.
Johnny, I'm glad to see you.
Yeah, how are you, Doc?
Don? Well, I just given him a final injection and across the seven that... Well, come on in.
He's failing, Doc?
As a last resort, I've used a new, very radical sort of treatment. One of the so-called but not fully tried miracle drugs.
And?
I'm just afraid he came to me too late.
But, Doc, there is a chance.
Oh, there's always a chance, Johnny. But in this case, a very slim one.
Doctor...
Here we are, Bill. You just relax.
Johnny Dollar.
Yeah. Well, here I am, Bill. See? Right here in the flesh.
Johnny?
That's right. Hey, look, if you expect to take me out fishing, you got to get well, old man.
No. Oh, Johnny, too late now.
Oh, come on now. That's no way to talk, old-timer.
I'm going to die. Now...
Yeah, who said so?
But you must tell him.
Tell who, Bill?
Tell police.
Tell what to the police?
No.
What?
No murder.
There was a murder? Or you mean there was no murder?
Oh, tell police that I did. I did it.
Easy, old man.
Gerald? Yes, I'm Gerald.
Gerald who, Bill?
Gerald. Right.
Yeah?
Darnley.
Gerald Farnley.
Yes.
He was murdered?
Gerald Farnley.
Yeah.
So, please, I did it. I did it, Johnny. You tell.
Doctor.
Yes, I'll see if he's...
The end, Doc?
Well, no. No. As a matter of fact, his heartbeat is... Well, it's stronger.
What?
Much stronger. Doc. Listen.
Yes, Doc?
Get to a phone and get an ambulance while I make him ready.
You mean that maybe you can pull him through after all?
Yeah. Now, come on, Johnny. Give me a hand with him.
Sure, Doc. Save him, huh?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, so that we can investigate this confession of his.
Huh?
Sure. And then see that he's executed for murder.
Oh, Don, for the love of my...
Yes, call that ambulance.
Scientific achievements usually are made through the combined efforts of many men. Such is the story of the Atlantic Cable, one of the outstanding milestones of the 19th century. But today the name of one man remains to remind us of that venture. The organizer and director, Cyrus W. Field, a retired paper merchant who risked his fortune, sanity, and integrity in an awesome adventure that lasted 12 long years. Field first was approached in regard to his short underwater cable to Newfoundland in 1854. After a huge investment of both money and energy, the cable was completed the following summer. Field then went to England to tackle the much larger problem of laying the Atlantic cable. Many futile attempts were made. Cable was broken. Splices were made. Cable was lost. Tempers flew, and ship captains resigned in disgust. Still, Field wouldn't give up. Finally, on August 8, 1858, it appeared that the project had been successfully completed. Cyrus Field went ashore and walked 15 miles to the nearest telegraph station. There he wired his wife, the Associated Press, and President Buchanan. He informed the president that Queen Victoria would telegraph her congratulations over the new cable. But before the Queen's message was completed, the line went dead. The much-hailed project was again a failure. Faulty insulation was blamed. In 1865, the largest steamboat afloat, the Great Eastern, made another attempt. Just 660 miles from Newfoundland, the cable parted. Inadequate hoisting tackle prevented its recovery. Field broke down and wept like a child. And yet, the very next year, he sailed with the Great Eastern for one more try. This time, every failure had been studied, every provision made. On July 27, 1866, Cyrus Field landed at Heart's Content. After personally cabling the unbelievable news, he immediately boarded the Great Eastern, retrieved the broken cable of the year before, spliced it, and laid the second Atlantic cable. Cyrus W. Field, another American whose driving energy insisted that somehow there must be a way. Let's find it.
And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. We carefully laid Old Bill in the back seat of Don Boomhauer's car and drove him to the hospital ourselves. And then we could only wait to see if the drug that Dr. Crutcher had given him would really do its work. And yet, if it did, if by some modern miracle the old man should recover. Well, Don had said it there at the shack, and he said it again that evening as we sat in the comfortable den of his home, trying to console ourselves with a couple of scotch and soda.
No, it's wrong, Johnny. There's something very wrong about it.
Yeah.
I mean pulling him away from death's door only so that he can be electrocuted for that murder he confessed to.
But did he really, Don?
What else could he have meant? So you've got to investigate, Johnny. Even Doc Crutcher has to report that confession to the police.
Maybe.
And so do I. We've no way out of it. None of us.
Earl Thornton.
Yes, the name of his victim, the man he murdered.
Did he? Is that what he tried to tell us?
Or what else could he have possibly meant? And don't forget, he thinks that he's dying.
Oh, I know.
A deathbed confession, Johnny. Happens all the time.
Oh, but look, is he the kind of man who could have killed somebody? He certainly didn't strike me that way.
But how do you know? It may have happened years ago.
And it may never have happened at all.
And I hope that somehow you're right. But can you prove it? Well, Johnny?
Pour me another drink, will you?
Sure, all you want. But you haven't answered my question.
I'm going to try, Don. I'm going to try. At about midnight, Doc Crutcher phoned to say that we should keep our fingers crossed and maybe pray a bit. As it now looks as though Bill Trasker might have a 50-50 chance to live. Then, unexpectedly, a call from Lieutenant Barney Phillips of the police department.
Yes, Mr. Dollar. Doc Crutcher told me all about it. I would appreciate any help you may want to give us on this.
Well, do you know anything about this Bill Thornley?
No, sir. Never heard of him. But we'll find out who he was. Don't you worry about that.
Lieutenant, how well do you know old Bill?
Well, that's the thing that puzzled me, Dollar. Old Bill is one of the nicest, one of the most kindliest old men I've ever known.
Uh-huh.
Came here to Sarasota. That's about 7 years ago. Seems he just went out of his way all the time, trying to be nice and helpful to folks. Didn't have much to give to anybody, money I mean, but whatever he had or he could do for somebody, he never would hesitate a minute.
I see.
But that doesn't keep us from having to do our duty. Get the goods on them, see that justice is done. The law's the law, and it's our duty to uphold it.
Old Bill came here 7 years ago?
That's right.
From where?
Well, now, if we knew that, we'd know where to look for information on this man Thornley that he killed.
If he did.
What's that?
I'll talk to you later, Lieutenant.
Oh, fine, Mr. Dolan. If you have any connections anywhere that can help us find out who Gerald Thornley was and why old Bill killed him...
If I can find out that he didn't kill any such man or anybody else...
Now, Mr. Dolan.
I'll be in touch.
Why are you so sure he didn't murder someone, Johnny?
Did I say that, Don?
You didn't need to.
Don, I want no part of this thing.
Donnie, I know. I know this is no ordinary sort of investigation, but as a company, we have to go through with it.
Why?
If you can prove that Bill didn't do it, which I doubt, well, it's the least we can do for a client or something.
Yeah.
And if you end up proving he did, well, it's a public service by the company or something.
Or something. Let someone else handle it. I want to put it.
Why did old Bill ask for you? Well...
Oh, well, I think it's because of... Well, in spite of what he said, in spite of what it sounded like... Hey, let me use your car, will you?
At this time of night? Here the key.
All right, good.
What have you got in mind?
Well, maybe keeping an innocent man out of the chair.
Now, Johnny...
I'll see you later. Obviously, the key to this whole matter lay in finding out about Bill's supposed victim, Gerald Thornley. Who he was, where he was, or where he had been. And then if Bill had ever been there. So I drove over to the shack again and went through Bill's clothes, hoping that some of them might be old enough to show where he'd been before he moved to Sarasota. Every one of them bore a New York label. Item 2, $5.20 for a tank full of gas. Item 3, after I reached the airport in Tampa, 460 for a long telegram to Ripley Keener, a pal of mine on the New York side. Item 4, 7170, and shortly after dawn, I was in New York. Rip was waiting for me at the airport.
You could have saved yourself the time and money and phoned me, Johnny.
Now, just what do you mean by that, Rip?
Well, I could have told you all there is to tell about Gerald P. Thornley in one sentence. I handled a story on him for the paper myself.
Well, what about him?
He ain't.
He what?
7 years ago, that crooked promoter disappeared.
Promoter?
And when the police finally caught up with when and where and how he disappeared, it left him with only one possible conclusion. Thornley was murdered.
Nevertheless,
Johnny, stop trying to act like a Pollyanna and get on back to Sarasota and nail that old guy for murder.
The 14th Amendment to our Constitution is one of its most important sections. It bestows United States citizenship upon every person, regardless of race, who is born within our borders or who is naturalized. And this amendment further provides that the privileges and immunities of citizenship cannot be taken away by a state, nor may a citizen be denied the equal protection of the laws. It is this amendment which makes us all equal citizens with equal rights, to the end that this country of yours and mine shall be our country under God.
Now, Act 3 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Recompense Matter.
Over breakfast there at Idlewild Airport, Rip Keener told me more about Gerald P. Thornley.
Not that Thornley didn't deserve to have somebody knock him off.
Just what does that mean?
When he got through with all his phony real estate promotions, he left more innocent people broke and hungry than you can shake it. Well, Johnny, that man made millions on his crooked real estate deals. And who suffered? Wealthy people who could afford to lose a few thousand here and there? Oh, no. No, sir. It was poor people who fell for his pitch and then suffered for it.
But the law, the authorities, they never got onto him.
He was too smart. Every deal he made was perfectly legal at the time. I'll tell you this, Johnny. A lot of the real estate laws got rewritten as a result of him. I mean, in spite of the way it finally turned out, the switcheroony.
What?
Sure. That gave me material for that feature I hoped was going to win me a Pulitzer Prize.
Just what are you talking about, Rip?
Well, back there in 53, after the coroner's jury said it was murder, they went through his papers and bank accounts. They found he left enough dough and instructions for it to pay back every cent he'd taken from the poor suckers.
You are kidding.
This is a bit, Johnny. I told you it was a twist. And, Johnny, that's what makes his killer all the more wrong. So get on back there to Sarasota and nail him down.
Yeah, Riff, I guess it's all I can... Wait a minute.
Huh?
Handle this right and maybe your next feature will get you a Pulitzer Prize.
Huh?
Poor people who've been taken by Thornley. Well, old Bill Trasker had never been in that category in spite of his menial job these last 7 years as a fishing guide. Item 5, 10 cents for a call to Lieutenant Randy Singer, 18th Precinct. Then I had Rip Keener drive me in to see him.
There you are, Johnny. A complete set of fingerprints on the late Mr. Gerald P. Thornley.
Good, good.
So why I should break my neck getting them in such a hurry?
Yeah, all right.
Put that so-called mind of yours to work finding out who murdered him seven and a half years ago. Why?
Yeah, well, that coroner's jury could have been all wet, you know.
Huh?
Why don't you keep Riff here entertained until I can phone him a feature story for Donna Sarasota?
Johnny, if
that is.
Yeah? If what?
Well, if this absolutely crazy hunch of mine pays off. Item 6, another 7170 for a plane back to Florida. From the airport in Tampa, I drove on down to Sarasota straight to the hospital.
It is a miracle, Johnny. If old Bill continues to improve the way he has in his last 12 hours, he'll live until... until they put him in the chair, much as I hate to say that.
Bill was much better. That almost was a miracle. He let me take a set of his fingerprints, and then he broke down and told me his story. Then at police headquarters, when one of the lab men compared the prints with a set I brought down from New York, Lieutenant Barney Phillips nearly flipped.
But I... Oh, no. Look, Al, I can't believe this. According to these prints, old Bill is Gerald P. Thornley.
That's right.
But I don't understand. But why, Dollar? Huh?
Well, his dirty real estate promotions were perfectly legal at the time. But he was ruining more innocent people, causing more heartbreak and suffering. But he hadn't thought about that in his lust for money. All he cared about was getting more and more of it, regardless of whom he was hurting. Until one day, this kidney thing hit him, and it scared him. And suddenly, he realized that one day he'd die as one of the most hated men in the world. But simply giving back the money would never erase the stigma that he'd have to live with. So he arranged his own disappearance, and he made it look like murder, so he could quietly get away and start leading the kind of life he should have been leading and could start doing some good for people. Exactly the way he's been doing here in Sarasota, Lieutenant.
There's a sort of recompense for the rotten things he'd done before.
Yeah, that's right.
And without having folks point him out as the crook he'd been.
That's right. And don't forget, the people he'd hurt up north were all paid off.
But, Dollar, when he thought he was dying, he told you murder.
He said no murder. Doc and Don misunderstood. He said to tell the police that he did it, that's all. And now we know what he did.
Dollar, I hate to say this, but he's still in trouble.
Old Bill Trasker?
Gerald P. Thornley.
Not anymore, Lieutenant.
What's it?
Thornley is dead. Legally dead.
Well, I know Thornley's... Well, I guess you're right, Mr. Johnny. Well, you say you're right.
Yeah. After sticking around a few days to make sure that old Bill's recovery would be complete... Well, I changed my mind about giving Rip Keener material for a feature. Let him wonder about it. Expense account total, including the trip back to Hartford, $200 and, no, Don, forget it. Just forget it. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Russell Thorson, Mark Robinson, Harley Bear, Barney Phillips, Dick Crenna, and Herb Vigran. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is John Wall speaking.
Johnny Dollar has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
This is Andrew from OTRWesterns.com. I wanted to invite you to come take a look at our site where we put out podcasts of old-time radio westerns. Check us out at OTRWesterns.com. You're listening to The Great Detectives of Old-Time Radio with Adam Graham. Now let's get back into the show.
Welcome back. I think it's probably worth talking about just a theme that I have noticed recurring on yours truly, Johnny Dollar, during the Bob Bailey, Jack Johnstone run. That's very prominent, and I think more so than in any other program. And that's that whole idea of redemption and second chances. Now, certainly every series might have a guy who's an ex-con trying to go straight. But this has been visited in so many ways. I think the way that, say, the Valentine Manor was put together, all the way back in the five-parters. There was the Rasmussen Manor, where he was investigating and he found dirt on a woman who was actually really trying to change her life and how that was dealt with. And then you have the question of Smokey, a recurring character who was a criminal. And there was even the scientist who was suspected of sabotage, but Johnny didn't instantly buy it, and he ended up being proved innocent, despite some troubling past associations. And as I've thought about it, I think this thread goes through a lot of Johnny Dollar episodes. And Johnny, I think whenever he understands a situation, always works to help out folks who, even if they did some bad things in the past, help them get on the right path. It just seems to happen a lot more often in Johnny Dollar than it does in other series. And I think that is part of what makes Johnny such an appealing character. All right, well, listener comments and feedback now. And we have some comments on the five down matter. Katie says, Johnny Dollar's my favorite radio show, and this is now one of my favorite episodes. I love the setup. It was so fun. Thanks for sharing this one and for all the great work you do on this podcast. And then Debbie says, thanks for this episode. Just listen to it. At the end, you mentioned that you had cut out 5-minute news bulletin about the union votes in Schenectady. But I heard that entire clip before your commentary. I listened through the app. Just thought you'd like to know. Well, thank you, and I am sorry. I meant to cut that, and I recorded this before I think I was going to leave a note for Andrew. Whatever it was, I forgot, and I'm sorry that you learned far more about the labor relations history of Schenectady than you were ever meant to. I will try and be more careful next time. Thanks so much for the comment, Debbie. And I'm sorry, don't know how to pronounce your name. Mr. DeConing says Johnny Dollar is one of my favorite old-time radio detectives. And finally, we have an email from Mark, who sends along a suggestion, a helpful one, regarding the theme music. Mark writes in. Mark writes, Adam, I remember that theme music was well used in the Peter Gunn TV show. I went to YouTube and found it. Looking for the theme, I found a very long version, but when I watched the first episode of the show, they play the music after the crime is committed. Give it a watch and listen. You might like the theme. Whether to replace yours or just use it sometime in the show. Just a thought. Keep up the great shows. Good luck in your adoption search. Well, thank you so much, Mark. I love the Peter Gunn theme song. Absolutely love it. I remember, I think the first time I heard it was when I was playing on a website, I believe it was shockwave.com, and they had a game on there. I think it was a computer version of an old arcade game with cars. You're in a car and trying to avoid being killed. It was like something from the 70s, but they had that theme music in there, and I love that. And then I found there's actually tied to a detective show, and that made it really neat. I think in terms of using it on the program, the big problem is that was composed by Henry Mancini, and that sort of thing would require a license. And it's probably something I might want to, you know, getting one of those licenses where you're able to play like from a library of music and not have to worry about, oh no, this song's under copyright. Though when I've look into those sort of things, I've kind of, my eyes have crossed trying to figure that out. The other problem is it really does have a late 50s, early 60s sound to it. I'm not certain it goes as well with or other programs, which are World War II era, and, you know, just after the war. But if I ever get that music license thing figured out and get that purchased, I would love to play the Peter Gunn theme on the program in some fashion, because it's just an incredible theme. I absolutely love it. Thanks so much for the comment, Mark. I would say, probably in terms of a replacement, I would probably look for something that was classical, maybe a little bit of jazz. It's got to be the exact right piece. All right, that will do it for today. Join us back here tomorrow for Dragnet. Next Friday, another episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. In the meantime, send your comments to Box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.